the rest of the story. It had begun as a World's Fair exhibition hall. It would be recognized as an architectural wonder, a national asset to Great Britain. Morton Shand would describe it as a precept inspiring as the Parthenon, an exemplar vital as the Pont de Garde, as important as Stonehenge or Ely Cathedral. It was called the Crystal Palace. It was made almost entirely of glass. In the summer of 1850, it was decided that the Great International Exhibition would be held in London's Hyde Park, not merely in Hyde Park, but in a magnificent building unlike any ever constructed. Originally, it was conceived as a huge structure of bricks and mortar. Designer Joseph Paxton suggested iron and glass, and his plans were accepted. The first column was erected September 26. Long before its completion, the building was being hailed as a national asset. In November, the publication Punch nicknamed it the Crystal Palace, and that name stuck, the Crystal Palace. A brief worker strike and two torrential storms slowed construction. Still, the last pane of glass was in place in January of 1851. London's press and public were ecstatic, and as the months passed, the colossal shining edifice inspired extraordinary pride nationwide, the Crystal Palace. The building itself covered almost 20 acres. The main section was about 2,000 feet long, 400 feet wide, and 100 feet high. That's not counting a 1,000-foot-long addition at the north end. There were 3 entrances, 17 exits, 10 double stairways to the galleries, 5,000 tons of iron, 600,000 cubic feet of timber, and 250,000 glass panes were used. It would require 24 miles of guttering to carry water away from the roof. The ingenious architecture included interchangeable structures. Many of the 2,300 girders and 33,000 columns were prefabricated so that one might be substituted for another. 3 large elm trees, which were growing in Hyde Park before the Crystal Palace construction had begun, were left inside the mammoth exhibition hall. An arched glass transept was constructed to cover those magnificent trees. 14,000 exhibitors displayed over 100,000 exhibits, and yet, for the people of Britain, one display eclipsed all of the others, the beautiful, breathtaking Crystal Palace itself. And when the exhibition was over, the public could not bear to see the Crystal Palace demolished. And so it was moved, column by column, pane by pane, all 20 acres of it, to nearby Sydenham. And there in South London was to be its permanent home. Decades passed. Decades of shows and exhibitions and festivals, and after almost a century of glory for the Crystal Palace, came the winter of 1940 and the bombing of London. And then somebody realized the Nazi bombers were following a beacon that no blackout could dim. The gleaming Crystal Palace itself, glistening brightly even by moonlight. It had become a surefire round-the-clock London landmark for the German air raids. One of the nation's greatest assets had become a monumental national liability. And so in 1941, the British demolished the Crystal Palace. No, not the Nazis. The British did it. What they destroyed was not the beloved architectural treasure, but the silent, shining betrayer. Not the beauty, but the beast it had become. And now you know the rest of the story.